Happy New Year! This is Out of Line After Hours with John McElroy and Gary Vasilash, episode 447 for January 4th of 2019, Sandy Monroe's Tesla Deep Dive. Watch Out of Line After Hours live at autoline.tv every Thursday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 12 p.m. Pacific. You can subscribe to this podcast for free by searching for Out of Line in iTunes, Stitcher, or YouTube.
Out of Line After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone Tires, your journey, our passion, and by Lear, a global leader in automotive seating and electrical systems.
Well, Gary, Happy New Year.
Same to you. How are you doing?
Doing great, man. Here's the first show of 2019.
I know, and it started like 10 minutes ago. It's been exciting. And
Sorry.
Well, we got to tell people about this. So we got David Welch from Bloomberg here with us.
Hello,
David. Sandy Monroe from Monroe & Associates. And great having you here, Sandy.
Great having you. It's great to be here. Yes, and Happy New Year to all. Yeah, that was it's a good year last year. Hopefully, it'll even be a better year this year.
That's how I'm looking at it. I thought it was a good year last year, and for us, at least, this year looks pretty good.
Auto in general, I'm sure we're going to have a guessing game as to how many cars are sold next year or manufactured.
Well, is there a Dr. Data number? Gary?
There is, but it has nothing to do with that.
But
it has to do with electric vehicles. And Sandy, you are our foremost authority on all things electric. Aren't you?
I can answer some questions. Hopefully, I can answer as many.
Well, the last time we had you on the show, you were talking about the Model 3, right. and David was discussing the story that he had written about the deep dive that you had done into that. And so, why don't you, like, for those who, and I can't imagine there's anybody who didn't watch that show, but for those who didn't, you know, tell us what you did with the Model 3, and then we're going to get into all kinds of stuff, as John says, because I have lots of questions for you.
Okay, so what we did was we did our own deep dive, and Bloomberg, I had some issues which finally got resolved, and I wrote little notes to everybody, and David, like that fast, responded, and like within 5 days, I'm standing in front of a camera with his people, and there was the deep dive article, and there was a video. And the video went out, and quite frankly, I was, you know, we got some comments and whatnot, but I was really surprised that a lot of people were very pro. They said, hey, nice job, very even-handed, thank you very much for, you know, expressing both views and blah, blah. And now on the other hand, my friend here with a purple tie, he got pasted. Oh, what's that?
It's magenta.
Oh, magenta. Sorry.
Don't you have a Crayola crayon box?
No, we couldn't afford it when I was a kid. Only had mud. But anyways, at the end of the day, it worked out quite well. And actually a couple of other very large companies in Japan decided after that to buy it. So and quite frankly,
Japan or China?
No, Japan. Yes.
Oh, interesting.
Yes. So yes.
So none of the American car companies bought it.
No, there was no Japanese American car companies that. Well, they're in America as well, but no, they were all Japanese companies. So that was a big surprise. That was nice.
So you did a study. You tore down the car. Right. You saw that they did some very clever things,
right.
And you saw that they did some things that were not so great, thus the even-handedness.
Well, I think it's like obvious. If you have if you design a car where adding the battery, which should add stiffness, doesn't change your stiffness. Something's wrong. You have over-designed that vehicle. It's too heavy. And the Tesla Model 3 is as heavy as a 328i. And a 328, and by the way, the glass is out of these things when we weigh them. And a 328i does not have a gigantic panoramic view the stars kind of thing inside. So that glass is out, and it's still heavier. The Tesla is still heavier. The body is heavier than a 328i. That's wrong, because a 328i is about the heaviest C-size car you can buy. I don't know if there's a heavier one, but I don't know it if there is. So the body isn't done well. And because the body's not done well, the doors don't close well. And nothing closures. No hood, no deck lids, no nothing is going to close properly if the hood or if the body isn't done correctly. And then they have the aluminum trunk, which to me, I don't understand what the rationale was behind that. And all
it would have been heavier had it not been.
Actually, you know, there's so many bits and pieces of aluminum and there are so many fasteners because the steel fasteners holding it together. We didn't go into that. We're not doing a redesign on that car. But it would be good. Anyways, but at the end of the day, that did not lighten the car, and it made it horrible as far as manufacturing is concerned. So that was the bad part. The good part's everything else. 5-bar link for the suspension, best electronics we've ever seen, best the lowest number of cooling hoses and hoses in general. And then all the harnesses, they got like 40% less harnesses than everybody else because they're smart. They put things in the right place. The batteries I loved. And then the electric motors, if we get into that, they've got magic. The electric motor is using Hallback effect or Hallback array, and that's what gives them the extra horsepower. Of course, everybody kind of knows now that the electric motor is actually smaller, lighter than everybody else's, but outperforms everybody. And that's because of the magnets, the way they put these magnets together. The magnets aren't a single magnet. I don't know if I mentioned that before, but it's 4 magnets. And I have one if you want to have a look at it. That Hallback effect or array has really made a difference for their power and whatnot.
If you got one, haul it out. Let's take a look.
Let's make sure we got a camera on that.
Those magnets will pull a car from the parking lot through that wall into this room.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what. Your watch is dead if you have a... wrong one. So, yeah, I've already...
You better not have a pacemaker.
My wife gave me a watch, but it's not here anymore.
Stuck to the magnet.
No, the magnet killed it.
So for those of us who are sleeping through electrical engineering...
you're kidding. How could you fall asleep?
So what is the Hallback effect?
The Hallback effect is something that was invented, I think it was in the...
Or discovered, actually.
They discovered it. It's even hard to get it out of the binder. So the Hallback effect is a trick way of taking 4 magnets that oppose each other. Okay, so you got 4 magnets that don't like each other. And I've got a sketch to show you maybe in there. And these 4 magnets fighting each other actually give you a better magnetic effect. So everybody has about the same size neodymium magnets. But the difference is, and you can see it on the edge. Are you zooming in or whatever?
Can you just explain to me? It looks rectangular to me.
Yeah, look at this camera right here that Carmen's at.
Okay, there it is.
Just hold your hand. Okay. In fact, hold it between your thumb and forefinger and so they can see more of it. There you go.
Oh, okay.
It almost
so
looks
the
like
magnet
a,
is the same on this side.
It looks
you can't
like a,
see it.
A real tiny cigarette lighter.
Yeah, on the edge. Can you come in any closer, Carmen?
And for those of you who are listening to this, Sandy's holding a gray rectangle that's about the size of a bazooka bubble gum.
Exactly. A little bit bigger. But anyways, you can see there's 4 stripes.
Oh, and each one is a different...
Each one is a different magnet, and each one has got polarity in a different direction. So when I first seen this, we were on the shop
floor. So wait a minute. You're saying north and north and south are next to each other, so they're fighting each other.
But they also have to be twisted. So you're turning them this way and that way, but you're also turning them radially as well. It's kind of complicated. And the different ways of turning it will give you different power outputs. This is a science all by itself. So anyway, there's 4 stripes in here. There's 4 magnets glued together. So, I'm looking at the report, and I brought that, too, just in case somebody... Oops. we won't bother with that part. But anyways, somewhere in here, I thought, maybe it's the thing I just threw on the floor. I don't have it. It's in there. Anyways, I'll get it in a little bit. But at the end of the day, there's a lot of people that know about this but don't do anything with it because, it takes a lot of effort. So I'd never seen it before, never heard of it before. Anyway, myself and Al Steyer, who runs the BIC, my benchmark center, we're standing there and we're looking at it, and I'm saying, "Well, how come this thing's lighter and costs less, but it has more power? What the hell?" And we're sitting there arguing about this, that, and the next thing. And I'm looking down and I said, hey, what's those stripes on the end of the magnets? And Al looks at it and says, why? I don't know. So we pull a magnet out. I put it in a vise. And I said, well, let me give it a little tap. Maybe it'll break. And it blew up. It was like unbelievable. These things really don't like each other. I don't know how they glue them together.
I was just going to ask, what kind of glue is that?
I don't know, but it's good glue, a damn good glue. If you need to fix your shoe, this is the kind of stuff you need. But at the end of the day, that was what started it. And then we started looking around, and we've got friends now in Italy that were really excited about this. And, of course, we work a lot with Chrysler. Chrysler got all the data. They had bought in the report already anyway. So they got all the information we had on it. But the big thing is I can't reverse engineer this damn thing. Every twist and every turn has little things in it, little nuances that the only way you can find out about it is if you're there when they glue them together. So whoever makes this, that's my
So Tesla makes its own motors?
Tesla makes its own motors to some degree. It doesn't make some parts like this one. I doubt very much if they make that part. I think they've got somebody.
But the motor is their design.
It is their design, completely their design. And how much they make of it, we said initially 100% with commodities like this in it. This is not a commodity. This is science. And so
what does it do to it? It makes it spin.
Root of two faster. So there you go.
Okay.
40%. That's kind of like what it is. Root of two is the number that everybody
pretty well in math. Yeah.
So for you engineers out there who did not sleep through your math classes.
So it's root of two?
Root of two. Square root of two.
Okay. Yeah,
root of two is a magic number. Anyways.
I thought you were saying Rudy Tootoot.
Rudy Tootoot. And you slept through every class. No, but anyway.
No, I was drawing pictures of cars.
Yeah, well, that's, I mean, what kid doesn't do that? Right. Let me move this out of the way. But anyways, this is really, really cool. I really think that this is the game changer. So when you look through the little magazine here, let's see if I can find the dim. But anyway, you can see the comparison on the electric motors. The electric motor comparison is quite dramatic. You can see that the weight, the amount of cost, and everything else, everything is less on the Tesla motor.
In fact, we got a question here from Dave Tuttle, who's really into electric cars and knows this stuff, and he says, Sandy, why do you think the new Jaguar I-Pace has such lower efficiency ratings than the Tesla? What makes their design have far less range for an equivalent battery size? Do you think it's this motor?
One of them is the motor, no question about that. I bet you there's some sort of thing in here that tells me. The motor will be one. The efficiencies that we've seen so far with... The efficiencies we've seen so far with pretty much everybody else is lower. I think that, quite frankly, the way that they've architected the car from an electronics and electric standpoint is just superior. Now, that being said, did I take one apart yet? No, I have not. I did not take apart, and I'm not going to
take what apart?
A Jaguar.
Oh, Jaguar. Yeah.
Because... I'm interested in who's going to make the most money and who's going to be selling the most vehicles. And it's not going to be Jaguar. I mean, I didn't take apart a Tesla S or an X either because, quite frankly, there's nothing. So what? I mean, when we looked at it, I mean, they didn't have a good body build. There was nothing in it. Cursory look at it. There was nothing in it that made me think, hey, this has got great stuff in it. Same thing with the Jag. We've looked at it. People are interested in a little bit, but at the end of the day, nobody really cares. Who is out there going to be building something that's going to compete with a Jaguar? Really, it's just not going to be there. So,
one question I had for you, because after that, one of the criticisms you had is they put too much steel in the floor pan of the car when the battery itself, which is it. Sits above the floor pan, was already giving tons of structure for safety. Yeah. And you were critical of that, and I wrote that in the story, and then I got all these people saying, it has a great safety rating. You don't know what you're doing.
Yeah,
you know,
it does have a great safety rating. And so does the Sherman tank. So at the end of the day,
you're saying that extra steel was overkill because the battery was already.
Yeah, they didn't take advantage of the battery being a stiffening agent. They didn't do
stressed
it at all.
Stressed member.
It's not there. Every other car, I mean, you get the body strength as a combination of the battery and the body in white. That's not the case with the Tesla. Not the case at all.
So had they made it a structural member rather than adding all of this additional mass, do you think your numbers would be even better?
Oh, yeah. No question about it.
So if they do Tesla Model 3.1,
oh, yeah.
Can they modify that?
I'm telling you what, if I was Mr. Musk, and I did mention it, I talked to Mr. Musk a little bit. He's not a fan of consultants. They're barnacles. So the conversation was kind of limited. I mentioned the body, and he cut me off and said, I fired that guy. And as he was saying that, I was saying kind of maybe not loud enough, but not soon enough. I said something along those lines, but quietly.
Have they taken any of your ideas, any of your lessons learned?
No, we don't. We have no communication. Quite frankly, if they were a customer, I wouldn't be talking about them. It's very difficult to talk about a customer on here. Here, finally, what do you know? So the our Tesla Model 3 cost $754.14, and it weighs 46.1 kilograms. And
this is the motor.
This is the motor. BMW's cost is $841, and their weight is 48.37, so an extra couple of kilograms plus.
And this is for the i3?
Yeah, this for the i3. And then the Chevy Bolt. $836 and a weight of 51.49. There's a lot of other reasons why that's a little bit heavier, but at the end of the day, it's just the reason it's heavier is because it's not the best design. It's not the best way to attach different features and whatnot. So that's kind of I don't know if they want to see this, but anyway, that's kind of what it looks like.
And again, for those who
I'll hold it.
Who you haven't watched every show,
I don't know, maybe Sean can get a camera on me.
So you've actually torn down the i3, and you did a tear down of the motor of the Bolt. You didn't do that.
Actually, we did the Bolt for two different customers that wanted to know everything they could know about the Bolt. I thought it was a pretty good effort by GM and LG. Up until I got to really get in deep with the Tesla, I thought that the LG batteries were absolutely the best on the planet. So I flip-flopped all over the place. Now I'm pretty sure that Tesla battery pack or the Tesla Panasonic battery pack are about as good as you can get right now. And until somebody brings out solid-state batteries, I think that they're going to be hard to beat.
So if you were to rank these three cars, the Model 3, the i3, and the Bolt EV, from an engineering point of view, how would you rate these?
From an engineering point of view?
Yeah, rather than, you know.
Okay, so they all have strong points. And from an engineering point of view, I'll start with the Bolt. The Bolt did a good thing. GM doesn't have a lot of money to throw at all the different cars that they're developing. They took a spark, ripped out the bottom, told somebody else to come in here, put in batteries and motors and whatnot, saved a tremendous amount of engineering costs and whatnot, and RE, and boom, wound up with a car and got it into the marketplace quick. So that was a good thing with them. A good thing with the BMW i3, I mean, they were right out there with... you know, new technology. They had the carbon fiber stuff and all the other razzle dazzle technologies. That casting that you can weld to two different kinds of aluminums, welding them together. That was amazing. I was very impressed. And with Tesla, pretty much everything else. They have the best design for electronics. They have the best electronics designs. They have the best harness designs. They have the best, as far as I'm concerned, from a driving standpoint. And you've driven the car as well. This is big. It drives like it's on rails. And then of course the motor slush box. That or not slush box, but it's not really a transmission. Whatever that. Kind of stuff, all that that's inside the skin, everything inside the skin is, or apart from the skin, is brilliant. I think it's brilliant.
How tough would it be for them to sort of retrofit or go back and fix a lot of these body and manufacturing issues? Or are they kind of stuck with a lot of this?
No, engineering-wise, a piece of cake. Altair's got things, a product called OptiStrut. Put it in there. It's going to come. It's going to start laughing first thing the computers do. It laugh at you, and then it's going to come back and say this is all wrong, and it'll give you suggestions on how to really design this thing. And anybody that wants to make millions of cars a year, the first thing they're going to do is get rid of the aluminum. I don't want that stuff. I'm not going to attach aluminum to steel. What for? Why would I want to do that? That's like begging for problems. I get rid of that, and car is going to come out a lot lighter. So the engineering aspect is a big nothing.
So if they get rid of the aluminum and use just lightweight steel,
it's better. Believe me, there's no lightweight aluminum on that car. Everything there, like if you take 10 parts and you rivet them or weld them together versus one piece of steel that really doesn't, it's crumple. That's a crumple zone. It's not heavy. It doesn't have to be much of anything. And by the way, the longitudinals are made out of steel, and they're going to take the big shock. So I don't understand. I don't think there was any weight savings whatsoever in making the aluminum. In fact, I wouldn't even make it out of aluminum. I would just drop in a piece of like a fiberglass pan and call it a day.
In fact, we got a question here from Jan Furslev from Denmark. He's worried about the parts of the Model 3 that are not made of aluminum. He wants to know, would extra rust protection be advisable?
Nah. No, the cars don't. In the olden days, yeah, they used to rust out. But nowadays, aluminum is much more expensive. Aluminum has a sweet spot at around 70,000 vehicles. If you make 70,000 vehicles a year, then probably that's where you want to be. Then there's one for carbon fiber. It's around 50,000. But if you want to make 250,000 or 300,000 or 400,000 or whatever, you got to go to steel. It's just that's all there is to it. You just can't make it happen.
So how do you explain the F-150?
The F-150 is not 100% aluminum, number one. And secondly, based on what I've heard, there's a lot of people that wish that maybe some more parts would go back to steel or something else. I
wouldn't be surprised if they don't stick with aluminum going forward with the F-150.
I think that probably if it was up to me, I would use some aluminum probably for the cab. I would make the box out of something else. I don't know exactly what. I've talked to other people in other magazines and whatnot, and I said I'd make it out of carbon fiber. If you want it light, that's plenty light.
GM has a carbon fiber bed for the new truck and certain upgraded trim levels.
Really?
Yeah, on the GMC Sierra. Right. Yeah. Made by Continental Structural Plastics.
Well, there you go. So at the end of the day, everybody thinks of carbon fiber, and they think of an airplane and $42 a kilo or whatever. That really doesn't need to be used for that kind of truck. And now you've got so many people that are making carbon fiber, and the Chinese have make aircraft grade, and they sell it for what we would classify as automotive grade. So the aircraft guys, I mean, they've got a high part count or a high thread count. And they've got a length that nobody else really wants to get into, but I can buy tool down here that's almost as good from the Chinese and make a something hugely structural for a lot less money.
But would that be for $50,000 a year?
No, when you're doing that kind of thing, that's a very simple part. Is the box simple for something like carbon fiber? So. No, that would be whatever you want. And by the way, all I have to do is just 50,000 is good for a car body. I don't want to have a whole lot of stamping dies and stuff like that for something that's. But if I'm doing something like the bed of a pickup truck, I just put multiple machines to work and crank it out that way.
Dan Neal wrote in to say Elon says that he wasted money on aluminum front crash that didn't make it to the final design.
That's entirely possible. But like I said, that car is so over-designed, it isn't even funny. And I don't know what they meant by crash design, because that car would crash the same with or without the battery. It crashed exactly the same. Really, I mean, it's amazing. Now, that study's also available if people want it. We lent the car to Siemens. Siemens did all of the studies on harmonics and stuff like that, and twist and torque and whatnot. Everything is done. Everything can be purchased off of them. No big deal. And quite frankly, that's the one thing in the study that just shocks the daylights out of you. They're the same with or without the battery.
So the person who designed that
is fired.
Well, okay, but I mean, yeah. they probably didn't take that into account when they did it. So, I mean, it's...
Oh, if you're the engineer in charge, you're going to take everything into account. People give you objectives, and they give you targets, and there's money targets, and there's stress targets, and strain targets, and on and on and on. That guy just did a bad job, period. I don't know what he was thinking or why he went down that path, but I'm telling you what. I know one thing for sure. I worked for Ford and General Motors both, and Chrysler now. And quite frankly, that would never happen, never. No one would ever design anything like that. Someone would. He would have been fired instantly. That design, as soon as you see it and you look at it and say, hey, this thing's all blue. What's going on here? That means that it's over-designed, basically. There's no stress marks anywhere.
We don't really know who the head of body engineering was, but the head of manufacturing engineer was fired, and he came from Segway before he worked at Tesla.
Segway? Yeah. Well,
I don't know if he's responsible for that, the part you are working on or that you worked on, but that was the guy who I think was head of product development, actually, for the moment.
Not Doug Fields, are you talking about?
Yeah, he came from Segway.
Right, he came from Segway, and now he's at Apple.
Correct.
And working... Really?
I don't know anything about that.
Okay, we got a lot more to talk about here, but we got to take a quick commercial break. We're going to give a shout out to our good friends at Bridgestone. Okay, we're back talking with Sandy Monroe, with David Welch, and it's Gary and John here talking too. So what's next on the agenda? What do we talk about more here? We got all kinds of questions coming in, but I wonder if you guys got something.
So I want to know, when you did your story, what was the, I mean, Tesla owners and Tesla fans seem to be rather.
Yeah, they were unhappy.
So why were they unhappy with? I mean, because you know, it's like there is no other car that I'm aware of that has so many people so worked up, one way or the other about the company, the car, everything. I mean,
so look, this company and the cars and Elon, they're a phenomenon, right? The people are really passionate, obviously. I've never encountered something like this where if you just point out something they did wrong, that there are all these conspiracy theories and they come out of the woodwork. Now, you know, not everybody who writes in is, you know, completely sane because some of these tinfoil hat theories. But look, in a way, I get it, because the company has had a lot of short sellers. Short sellers, they're buying a contract that's betting the stock will go down. And short sellers are notoriously manipulative, and they put anonymous reports out about companies and this sort of thing. Or at least they've been known to do that. There are some big-name short sellers who are straight-up traders and very reputable. But short sellers, you know, because of some of the bad guys, have a bad name. Now, the central conflict around Tesla and why these people get so crazy is, what Elon Musk wants to do is put a solar panel on your roof that converts sunlight to electricity, charges a battery on your garage wall, charges up your car, and it's a really cool car. What's not to love about this, right? And really, you know, the most, you know, Bob Lutz would like this vision, and he, you know, has famously called global warming a crock, right? So this is a great vision, and there are people who are very passionate about that. Then you have short sellers and people on the street who say, yeah, you know, that is a nice vision, but you still have to make money. In fact, I'm going to bet that you're going to lose money and publicly say that I think you're going to lose money. And when you have this vision that is, you know, at a minimum wanting to become the next Apple and just create really cool products that happen to be cars that people get passionate about, and at a maximum is saving the planet, versus a bunch of guys who just want to make money on your demise, you know, the battle lines are drawn.
And that's a great way of describing it. And it really is.
Yeah, and really, like, you know, there have been times when I sort of feel for Elon Musk because, like, this guy's passionate about his vision. And, you know, there's a scene in the movie Jobs where, you know, Michael Fassbender is playing Steve Jobs. And who played Scully? It was Jeff Daniels played him. And I can sort of see this in Elon where Fassbender says to Daniels, you know, I don't want to deal with those Wall Street guys. I told you to deal with them. And I think that's where Elon is, right? He sees raising money from the street as this necessary evil that he has to do so that he can come up with this vision. And even a critical note from an analyst. Remember, he got angry at the analysts on one of their earnings calls and just cut him off and went and took questions from the fanboys on YouTube. Even a critical analyst would throw him over the edge. The short sellers really drive him insane. And Elon's fans are totally in that camp, that there are just a bunch of guys who want to make a buck who are trying to undercut this whole thing. And even if you don't buy the vision, you just love the car. It's still, you know, this guy, he's the new Preston Tucker. If he's not saving the planet, he's the new Preston Tucker who's just building a better mousetrap.
I think you're really selling this guy short.
No, I'm telling you the two opinions on this.
Ships. I mean, at the end of the day, we haven't had anybody like this since like
Ford
Edison.
And Edison.
Yeah, that's the only two that I can think of is Ford and Edison. This guy is looking at everything. So Ford, I mean, he looked at using alternate energy. So he had all these little cottage places that when I was working at Ford, they had little sluice ponds and water wheels to drive things and whatnot. He had tractors that he wanted to build. He got into the airplane business. He did everything, right? Same thing with Edison. Everybody knows a little bit about this and that, but Edison had a myriad of things that he threw out there that we haven't seen anybody Elon.
Love him or hate him, Elon's an amazing guy. Because first of all, he made a lot of money on PayPal, so he has had a successful business. SpaceX is a successful business. Now, the part that there are two things that have really tripped him up with Tesla. And I think if he had just done these things from the start, the short sellers and a lot of the people, even some of the critical analysts and long shareholders, would have had to go away a long time ago. The corporate governance, for a long time until very recently, he's had a board that was basically mostly his longtime cronies. People have backed him with investments for a long time, and his brother, right? I mean, it's okay when you're a startup, but when you're a public company with a $50 billion market cap, you can't have your brother and a bunch of friends on the board. And that's, it's been something that they've been slow to address, and now they're finally doing it. And it just opens them up to criticism, even from the more even-minded critics on Wall Street. And the second thing is, manufacturing. I mean, he does have real car people there, but Elon's not a manufacturing guy. The fact that he's sleeping on the plant floor was probably not helping. And if he talked to somebody like Sandy or even one of Sandy's competitors who was good and had real manufacturing people engineering this car for build and setting up the plant, he'd have had the Model 3 out in full production a long time ago. He would have hit his targets. And the short sellers would have had to go away because the company would have been bringing in profits and cash flow, and they would have mathematically already lost and have gone away. And he wouldn't, his frustration with those people was at the heart of him tweeting out, I'm going to take the company private, which again got him in big trouble and was a governance and
SEC. And the SEC didn't like that very
much. So, all of these things are kind of related that, if he had done the brilliant stuff that he's doing with SpaceX, with Tesla, his cars are really cool. And I've got people I know at the car companies particularly here in this area, this part of the country, saying, you know, who like to take shots at Tesla. You know, he proved you can make an electric car, make it cool, make it work, and actually, you know, we'll see. The jury's still out on profitability, but they made some pretty good numbers last quarter. And Sandy says if the labor cost is right, the car can make money, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, Gary, do you have sales numbers for Tesla at all?
But for years, the car companies told us batteries are too expensive, the cars will never be profitable, they all have to be little econo boxes because that's all you can make work with the size and weight of the batteries, et cetera, et cetera. And now, what are we going to see over the next 5 years? GM, Volkswagen, Audi, Porsche, the other Germans, BMW, Mercedes, coming out with cool, real cars. I mean, look, the Bolt is a nice technological achievement for GM. They did a good job engineering it. But it's a hatchback that looks like a running sneaker. I mean, you know, and it's, you know, it's selling okay, but it's a good first step for them, but it's not what the Model S or the Model 3 are. It's just not.
So while I'm looking for this, Sandy, two questions for you. Is the Model 3 profitable, number one? And then number two is you've got experience in Detroit like few other people do. Why hasn't Detroit been able to do what Elon's done?
Okay, so the first thing is I believe that based on our numbers and everything else, that they should be able to do over 30% gross. Over.
Gross okay? profit.
Gross profit.
And what is that in the context of?
But there's one thing I don't know. I don't know. I've never been in that factory. People have sent me little snippets of video that they've released.
Doesn't tell you anything.
Doesn't tell you a thing. Some guy sent me, you got them all.
That's yeah,
right. We all got them. And I said, thanks, but there's nothing here. But at the end of the day, I need to see what that factory looks like before I can do anything. People throw money at this, that, and the next thing. I need to know. The only way I would know is if I was there. And I'm not going there anytime soon, I'm pretty sure. So all I can do is look at the car. And if it was manufactured even halfway close to where a normal car company would be, that's what it should be. And then we look at the other thing, this low-cost vehicle. The low-cost vehicle, we took a stab at it. Actually, a lot of the people that are buying or have bought the Tesla report, the Tesla Model 3 report, are asking, well, what's it going to cost? I mean, where did you come up with the 18%, blah, blah. Can you give us a report on that? And so consequently, we're cranking that out right now, actually today.
So 18%,
today.
You mean 18% gross margin on the base $35,000 model.
$35,000.
If they ever build one.
Or $37,000.
Or, okay, $37,000.
Yeah. Anyways, at the end of the day, it is $35,000 now, isn't it? You took $2,000 off everything. But anyways, at the end of the day.
But it doesn't exist. So
it doesn't exist. But you know what? There's enough hints. And we know how people decontent. We do that kind of work, too. We know how you're going to be building up or tearing down a vehicle. So I kind of like know what we're going to have. And our customers are jumping up and down, especially some of your analyst friends. They normally don't spend much money on anything. And a couple of them are saying, well, we need to have real numbers, real facts. Can you give us something? So we're going to do that. But you know what really started the ball rolling was, hey, Tesla's going to make this in China. What's the cost of that vehicle? Okay, so Elon made a few mistakes on that body. Think he's going to do it again? I don't. You think that his production line's going to look like he's got in California? I don't. You think he's going to pull those batteries in and have a lump of failures? I don't. I think the factory in China is going to be wicked compared to what they've got in the States, and I think he's going to be able to clobber everybody in China that wants to come up against him. That's where, and so people are saying now, well, if you do, can you do this? Can you take the can you take the existing car and figure out what it's going to be in China? Can you tell us what that car is going to cost? And so that was at the last year, at the end of last year and whatnot. So I had all this time to think about it during the holidays. And now I've got a plan, and we actually put it in place today. We're going to do the costing for what a China Tesla 3 was going to cost, and we're doing the costing on the 37
okay,
or whatever.
So back of the envelope, rule of thumb.
Oh, no.
I know you're going to do that. What I'm asking you right now is how much cost do you think that they could pull out of it, out of a Model 3? A couple of grand?
In the States?
In China. When you get a chance to do it, not necessarily clean sheet, but you can clean up a lot of things.
I'll bet you dollars to donuts, the body in white's a clean sheet.
Oh, interesting. So how much cost do you think you could pull out?
Easy, 20%.
Oof.
Easy.
Wow.
And that's normal. That doesn't count if I can get rid of the ugliness on that body in white. I mean, I think that there's a couple, $300 that could come out of that body in white. You can.
So they go to Altair. Job. They buy the Optimum software, whatever it is, and
OptiStrut. Yeah.
OptiStrut, and they're good to go, right?
No.
Okay. No. After they hire you.
I don't want that job. Like I said.
Why hasn't Detroit done this?
That's the second question. I'll tell you why. Detroit is. Once upon a time, Detroit was extremely. Excited about cars. Detroit now is extremely excited about margins and risk and blah, blah, blah. All these other things that Elon Musk is
not. Is it just Detroit or is it traditional automakers?
I think now it's all automakers, but, I think that there's shots of brilliance every once in a while. The BMW i3, that was a gigantic risk. They built their own carbon fiber plants. They put forward more algorithms than anybody's ever done before as far as how do I design this, how do I layer this stuff.
Except for one thing, they've sold off that Moses Lake facility,
there's
right?
Three of them, yeah.
Okay, well, they're back. They haven't done anything else with carbon fiber, and the i3 is a dud sales-wise.
Hey, let's build the ugliest car in the world. Call it a BMW and see what. I mean, if the car looked halfway decent.
David, what's uglier, the Bolt or the i3?
I don't think the Bolt is actually hideous looking. It's just Americans hate hatchbacks. They hate small cars. Companies are killing them off left and right. It's just all wrong for the market. And it's not super ugly. It's just it's not a hot vehicle configuration, really, for any market right now, but especially the U.S. market. The i3 is particularly weird. I mean, they're like, okay, my brother just bought one because he likes the weirdness of it. There are not enough people out there who like weird to
it's
go buy
ungainly.
An i3. And my brother bought the white one because in white it looks like a stormtrooper helmet from Star Trek, which he's right, and it's cool. I like when he told me that, I get it. But it's, again, these aren't cars that have mass market
appeal.
There's
a white one. Look at that. I'll tell you.
Yeah, these aren't cars with mass market appeal, and the Model S and the Model 3 are. The Model X, not a great design either, really. I mean, it was compromised in a lot of ways and over-engineered in a lot of ways. Elon has admitted all of that, and it hasn't sold in great numbers. But the S and the 3 have, and they're regular cars, In addition to looking good, they're regular cars.
So you were interested in what the sales were. So for Q4, they sold 63,150 Model 3s.
For 3 months?
Yeah, so, okay. And then for, there were 13,500 Model S's and 14,050 Model X's. So for the total of 2018, there were 240 vehicles, of which 145,846 were Model 3. So basically Model 3 is
Dominating.
But, okay, well, here's the thing.
They missed their market target or whatever for this quarter. I think
by a couple
slightly.
Hundred
by what?
But it was they missed it. They missed their the forecast by a couple hundred vehicles.
It was, it was a really low number. At the end of the day,
the stock got pounded. But they.
So here's the point I want to make. Centurion 1973 just wrote in to say Model 3 sales in December were 25,250. I think I glanced at Ward's had a preliminary number of around 26,000. The point I want to make is they're outselling Audi now.
Yeah.
They're outselling in the luxury market everybody except for BMW, Mercedes, and Lexus.
Yeah, I want to tell you something Elon Musk told me years ago.
And that's just with three.
This was before they were even selling anything. So the Model S was basically the Tesla drivetrain stuffed in a Mercedes CLS. And the design studio was a tent inside the SpaceX building in Hawthorne, California. And I said, you know, why would someone buy this car from you, this unknown, worried about warranty, everything else, when they could just buy a cool $50,000 sedan from Mercedes? And he said, you know, he said, the Japanese have been beating American car makers on the mass market end, and they have been, and the Germans have been beating them on the luxury end. You go to Japan, you go to Germany, and everybody's got an iPhone, and everyone's surfing Google. Silicon Valley knows how to beat foreign competition. And when I make a cool electric car from Silicon Valley with American technology and ingenuity, they're going to love it. And he was dead right. I mean, that's another key part of this brand. And look, there are a lot of things about the build quality of the car that you've talked about, and just looking at gaps between sheet metal and stuff like that, that, you know, leave something to be desired against conventional car companies. But he's delivered, with the S and the 3 anyway, he's delivered what he said he would do. And that's why he's got so much passion for these cars.
Well, the big thing is that the millennial buyer, or the buyer that's buying that car, they aren't interested in gaps. They don't give a damn.
Right.
They care about bewitching quality. And I talked about this before. That car,
if you're a first-time buyer, you don't know what a big gap is.
Exactly right. And quite frankly, a lot of the people that are buying the car are either first-time buyers or first-time new car buyers. So who knows what kind of a clunker they had before. This is like quiet. I don't have to worry about trying to get it started and on and on. And then you get, oh, it's not stopping fast enough? OTA, over the air. Boom. And it changes.
You know, that is another thing here, is why aren't other car companies doing over the air?
Okay, we're going to come back to that in a minute, but we're going to take a quick break. And I see you brought other things to show us and tell us about, so we're going to get to that. But first, a shout out to our friends at Lear.
Lear Kinexus offers a parental controls application with geofencing that sends notifications regarding driving behavior and location, including curfew alerts, acceleration alerts, and speed alerts, all delivered to a smartphone application that includes vehicle location, driver notifications, and a report card of driving history, including notifications when predefined geographic boundaries are crossed. For more information, visit Lear.com.
The first time I've been allowed, because every time I...
Oh, hold on. We got to let everybody know we're back here.
Oh, okay, yeah. Good. All right, good.
Cindy and I don't care, man. We just launched
it. So what's... You're starting to talk about something in Motor Trend about Jeep and what?
Yeah, well, that segue would be kind of like awkward now. So let's just talk about this thing.
You brought other stuff here.
So...
Visual aids for those who are not...
We talked about a lot of things that that Tesla did right, but one of the things that's so right, so not obvious, is this thing right here. This is called a super bottle. See a little man on there? And we'll put it over here. This way, okay? See that little black man there? See if you can zoom in on it. Okay? This is the little logo on the super bottle. How about I do that? That'll make it easier. See that smiling face? This is really cool. This bottle does all the cooling.
For the battery?
For everything.
The car?
Everything.
The cabin?
Everything.
Battery, cabin, motor?
Everything that you would have in your, you've got a... you've got a heat exchanger here for your AC system. You've got a heat exchanger here for... The battery module, everything goes through this little bottle right here. We were really thrilled with this. A little lever here, and I can't move it right now because somebody tightened the bolts up. But anyways, it's got the ability to change. This changes everything. Now you were asking before, why don't we see the guys in Detroit do things? Do you know how many different fiefdoms you have to have in order to make this happen? I mean, the engine cooling guys. Oh no, you can't do that. I own that. Those are my horses. This is my horse, and you can't have that. And this place is mine. And but the arguing and bickering that goes on about cooling is just out of this world. And they took this. This crosses like powertrain, HVAC, on and on and on. And here they've created something that this isn't the first time that we've ever talked about doing this. I mean, we've talked about it a lot. But because of the Detroit infrastructure, the way that that cars are designed, you have this. You stay out of my territory. You stay out of my territory. You can't have that if you want to try and develop something like this because it crosses too many different lines. This, I think, is really kind of cool. Now, we haven't got time to talk about it, but the guys down at Jalopnik, they came down, and this is the center of their attention. The guy that wrote it, Dave Tracy. He wrote about this thing, and I think he did a pretty good job. My guys are pretty happy. So I would suggest that maybe you go and have a look at this. And in there, it's all described as to how everything works and shows pictures of the different parts. And we actually allowed them to take pictures of the cooling.
Here we got the story up on the screen right now from Jalopnik.
Yeah. So if you go down here, you can see the little bottle there. When you get down to the bottom, you'll see the cooling diagrams to show you how things are cooled inside. The other thing about the...
So you're saying that nobody else is doing anything like this?
Do you think that came from someone who works within Tesla, or did this come from a clever supplier who said...
No suppliers. There's virtually no suppliers to Chrysler or to Tesla. They've got suppliers, but they're material suppliers or they're commodity suppliers.
Seats.
That's right. They have their own cushion room. Everything that we looked at, of all the things we looked at, we found very little that came from outside suppliers. And we have a list of suppliers, okay? We have a list of people that do supply things, but it's not a big list. They don't believe in the model that most North Americans and actually Europeans have. They're kind of like the Toyota thing where everybody says, oh, Toyota, how much vertical integration? Well, virtually none. Bull. They're about 90% because they own all those Karatsus. And the ones that they don't own, they control. They're sitting on their board. So at the end of the day, Tesla, one of the reasons they're successful and one of the reasons why most of the analysts are wrong is because there's no second markup. There's no second
markup. They do it all in-house.
If they do it in-house, you keep that profit that somebody else got. I mean, who's richer, the supply community or the OEMs?
But you also have to pay for all that, too. So your capital expenditure is a lot higher.
And that's what everybody keeps throwing out there. But if I'm Ford, I own the tools. That means I just paid for the tools.
So, you didn't pay for that plus a markup.
Exactly. Every time you get somebody else outside to do something for you, you're going to pay what you would have normally paid. You're going to pay on top of that because your engineers have to go and inspect it. Then you're going to pay on top of that because they have to have their markups. You're going to pay on top of that because they've got suppliers and sub-suppliers, tier two, tier three, whatever. They have. At the end of the day, if you cut to the chase, you can make a little more money if you know what you're doing.
But you liked the Chevy Volt because they outsourced quite a bit of it, including battery design.
And the reason for that is because GM didn't have the internal expertise. They don't have it.
Okay.
Whereas Tesla has the internal expertise. If you have the internal expertise, that's a good thing. I mean, now you can do things. When Henry Ford was running his show, he had 10,000 toolmakers. That doesn't count improvers or apprentices or anything else. 10,000. That's a hell of a lot of people. And so what happened? Why did he get... That's how he made his assembly line. Because his toolmakers were making the machines that made the car. At the end of the day, sometimes it's a good idea. I wouldn't go to the point where I'm growing my own rubber trees or something like that, but
Fordlandia.
Yeah.
So in the case of Tesla, here we have a company that basically starts from nothing, and just as we could argue that Ford Motor Company did back in the day, right? They just came up from nothing, and they have all their people. And as David mentioned, I mean, you were positive about the Bolt because they outsourced it, but they're a big company that has lots of people, right? General Motors has lots of engineers.
Okay. So there's a difference between people and talent, and quite frankly, that's where I think the old expression is the bullshit and the buckwheat, because at the end of the day, you can have lots of people running around. An army is wonderful. But we didn't send an army in to get Saddam Hussein or anybody like that. Those guys all got nailed by a very small group that knew what they were doing all the time, right? So Navy SEALs and Rangers and people like that, they're a little bit better than the average guy carrying a gun. Anybody can carry a gun. It's quite a different story to have them. Here's a knife and a piece of string. Go and get that guy. That kind of stuff is totally different. Those kinds of people are different. Tesla, I bumped into a couple of their people. They are not dummies. There's no question about it. They are very, very talented. Actually, one of the things that's got to happen at Monroe is we have to hire some more people. I'm going to need electronics engineers. I'm going to need guys that really know about how to assess things and whatnot, put them together for cars and whatnot, and I need new programmers. I need some programmers for our software because we have to expand. I can't find them. I want these people, but I can't find the people that I want. There's lots of guys. Here's my degree. I don't care. What have you done? I haven't done anything. Or my all-time favorite. Guy comes into for an interview, right? Comes in for an interview. Hi, my name is Charlie. I really want to work here. Oh, just a minute. Yeah, you know, at the end of the day, you got to really hire me because...
He's fiddling around with his phone as he's talking.
Can I just get back to you in a second here? I got to answer this. Are you kidding me? So I pick my phone up and I'm like, I got to go. That's it. So long, sucker. At the end of the day, I don't need anybody like that. And that seems to be what I get a lot of. So we're looking for workaholics, and what we're getting is, I don't know, the run of the mill. There's an army of engineers out there. But I'm looking for is what I want is Navy SEALs. I want Navy SEAL engineers. I don't want
So Tesla has Navy SEAL engineers?
Yes, they do.
So David,
but in specific areas, though, right?
In specific areas, yeah. I would imagine that there must be some guys that all they do is CAD work or something like that, or maybe doing what they're told. But at the end of the day, the guys that are telling them what to do, those are the kind of guys that's the kind of guys that I want to try and hire. I don't want to have. I don't need somebody to tell me about how they danced all night or. Tried to get you on LinkedIn or something. I don't care about that. That doesn't do any favors to my customers, and we charge a lot, so people want a lot back.
Yeah. David, why do you think we've not seen any competitors to Tesla, startup competitors, that have been able to make it? I mean, we've seen lots of concept vehicles and
we did. Just most of them have failed.
Right, but I mean, why? I mean...
Look... Among his other talents, Elon is good at raising money.
Yes.
He came out of PayPal where he had some of his own money to start with. And he raised money from SpaceX. Now, SpaceX is private, so we don't actually have access to the numbers. But from what I understand, it is profitable. There are bankers who'd love to take it public. And he's getting big government contracts to do a lot of really cool stuff. So Elon can go... and get money. Look, Tesla has only made money in a couple quarters in its history, but it's starting to turn, and it's created a lot of value in the market, and it's created a product that, if he started losing money again and the stock tanked, someone would buy this thing for the brand and for the technology they have. There's no question. So he's created value. So he can raise money. These other companies, they probably, I know that most of them have. They raised a little bit of money to start, get out of the gate, and they either couldn't get the car out the door or they couldn't get it sold. You know, Fisker, they made a cool car, couldn't sell it, couldn't get out of the gate, had battery problems, went bankrupt. you know, some of these others, geez, there have been a bunch. Ativa, I think. Was it Ativa? Aptiv.
No, that's Delphi. Aptera.
Aptera. So there have been a bunch of these companies that they got some money and they either couldn't get the car to the retail level, they couldn't get it to work, they couldn't get enough sales. And, you know, I mean, when you get seed capital, you got to start passing gates to get your next round of money. Elon's been able to do that. And well beyond, and you know, so part of it is even if he has only made money recently, he showed enough to get the next round of funding, and he had a reputation. He's got friends in Silicon Valley, and you know, look, one of the complaints about Elon is that he had a bunch of his old cronies on the board, but some of these guys, like Antonio Gracias, who was the non-executive chairman of the board for a while, had invested in Elon's other companies. So people believe in him, not just the fanboys who love the cars and the vision, but people who've invested with him. That's why he can raise money. I mean, he has been.
All the rest of those guys that failed, that book that I should have read or wrote, Cheap Always Loses. You show me somebody who failed, and I'll guarantee you that number one on the hit parade, they paid themselves a huge salary because they're so smart. But they didn't do was they didn't get the right people. They didn't get the right people to design the assembly lines. They didn't get the right people to identify what's the right way to put this product together or what's the right materials to use and on and on and on.
Well, Elon's had some of these same issues. He doesn't pay himself a lot, but he's had some of these other issues, and that's where they've stumbled and that's where they've had issues.
But he didn't pay himself a giant amount of money because he had all his money already. He didn't need any more cash, that's for sure. That kind of stuff, though, every time I see one of these things fail, you go back and, you know, do a root cause analysis. At major points, they just said, well, let's just get it into the marketplace. I'm so excited. And when you're excited and you get it into the marketplace and it flops, what are you going to do? How are you going to recover? You can't recover. So you have to, first off, have enough money. You can't just get going. It doesn't work that way. You have to have enough money to actually see the program all the way through, and you have to be smart enough to know that there's other people smarter than you. You should probably bring them in. Every time, too, that I see things happen, I also notice that the guys, when they do bring people in, they bring in the big guys. But they don't, these big guys, these big consulting houses, they don't really understand. They don't understand the car industry, I don't think. I've been in lots of meetings. I've listened to what they had to say. And quite frankly, I've got a theory or I saw something on TV or something. These things don't count. You need, when you want to design a body line, the best guy you can get is somebody who ran a body plant. There's a guy who knows which end is up. He's seen all of the materials, This guy is not going to ask for a gazillion dollars, and he's certainly never going to be hired by any of the big consulting houses. That guy that you talk to that says, well, and he's not going to be a good speaker. He's not going to be somebody you want to put in front of your board. But at the end of the day, he's going to know the difference between buying that stamping stamping machine over here or this one over there or who makes the best dies or... He's going to know all that stuff, and that's going to be really critical to your success. That's kind of like where I think they all fail. And because I've been interested in that same question. I don't understand why no one else can come up with it.
Well, there's one other thing that you got to do.
If you're going to go up against the established companies, the Toyotas, the Daimlers, the GMs and all, you better bring something new to the party, something that nobody else is doing, something that gives you a competitive advantage. You know, what got Toyota where it is today? It brought the Toyota production system that nobody else had going for them at that point. What's Tesla got? Over-the-air updates. It's got this embedded chip thing that you uncovered that nobody else
has.
The
thing he had is they had a great battery pack from the start that was affordable because they used the laptop cells initially. And everybody said it wouldn't work because they said the first Tesla had like 6,800 cells in there. And I remember people telling me it's not going to work because that's 6,800 connectors, that's 6,800 possible problems, and we're going to have all kinds of quality issues. One thing Tesla hasn't really had, they've had some quality issues like anybody, but they haven't had big quality gaffes where they had to recall every car. No, that can happen to anybody. It happened to Toyota. And they're very good at manufacturing. It happened to GM, and they are very good at manufacturing. So I'm not going to say Tesla's immune from this, but they really haven't had those kind of issues. They made a battery pack that everybody said wouldn't work, and they made cars that everyone said, you know, nobody wants to buy, and you know, they did have something new. That brand image Elon Musk talked about, where we're going to be the Silicon Valley. Basically, what he's saying is we're going to be the Apple of car companies. That's something that isn't, that was not out there in the market anywhere. You know, look, I think the other reason that no one else has been able to follow them on this is, and this isn't unique to Tesla, but what are we seeing in them? We're seeing nameplates in the market go away.
Yeah.
What's that telling you? We don't, you know, like there's not really, like Tesla has barged its way into the party with a unique brand and a unique technology and a unique vehicle. There's really no room. Like, we really don't need six other Teslas. Just like, you know, much as I love the, you know, the fact that Peugeot wants to come to the U.S. because I think we need Gallic weirdness in this market. I'm not sure we need Gallic weirdness in this market. I don't know that we need another brand trying to sell us midsize crossover SUVs. And like, what's the most profitable segment in the business? Full-size pickup trucks. We got three players who are great at it. We got one that's kind of good in Toyota, and you got Nissan kind of struggling still to get a foothold, and no one else is even bothering. And that's, there's a lot of money to be made there. So you got people pulling out of all kinds of passenger car segments because there's no room at the end. You got people not going after the most profitable segment because it's tough to crack in. You know, we just don't need a bunch of other car companies.
So do you guys think that when we have the products from Mercedes and we have the products from Audi and we have the products from fill in the blank, that this will diminish the allure of Tesla?
It's a good question. I don't think it'll diminish the allure, but it's real competition because a lot of the people who, look, I think, it's been a while since I looked at the data, and I think this was Model S data when I last did a story on this, but the biggest cross-shopping for Tesla was Porsche at the time. Now Porsche's coming out with an electric car, and it's, you know, it's a Porsche. You know, it's going to handle great. It's going to be cool. And it's going after people who have a lot of money. So, look, I think, you know, to John's point earlier about Tesla outselling Audi, I would think the Model 3, you know, the axes that have been gored because the Model 3 is selling have been the 3 Series and the A4. You get some kind of electric version of those from one of the German car companies. You know, look, Tesla has a great brand. Those guys have great brands, too. And they do know how to do this stuff, and they make a quality product, and they've got way more dealers, so that's more retail exposure. So, yeah, I think it's going to be a problem for Tesla. They'll see growth because Tesla's going to be hitting China. They're going to be hitting Europe pretty soon. So they're going to be growing as a company, but they're going to – this, look, if I were – I'm not allowed to invest here, and I don't give stock advice, but if I were a Tesla shareholder worried about, you know, are the short sellers going to make out, it's not because the company's going to run out of money. You know, if Iacocca could find Kerkorian, Elon will find 10 of those guys if he ever got in financial trouble. Mm-hmm. It's that he caps out his growth because the conventional car companies have competing models, right?
What do you think, Sandy?
At the end of the day, I read the Motor Trend thing when they handed out all the awards for the truck of the year.
Okay.
I read that one because I'm most interested in that. So anyways, and I read and the one of the auditors or whatever read that what he said was, well, there was no comparison when you looked at the Ram. Look at all of the stuff. Look at this. Look at the gaps. Look at the luxury. Look at the blah, blah, blah. And then I went and looked at this and that. Ah, there was no comparison. This was. And I think the reason for that is because everybody else in the industry thought that if we can just make it cheaper, everybody will want it. Yeah, and we'll make more profit because we'll just charge the same amount as everybody else and we'll make more profit. And I see a lot of guys in a little dark room wringing their hands together going, ooh, we're so smart. But at the end of the day, I got a chance to see the pictures that they took at the show. Between the three basic contenders, I was dumbfounded. You know, one looks like the inside of a spaceship, and the other ones look like, it's another truck. I think that...
You're talking the Ram, the Silverado, and the Sierra. Then, right,
right, yeah. I was really shocked that they would say, oh, here's the truck that we want you to have a look at and evaluate. That's it? That's what you're going to do? I mean, I don't know. Maybe they threw it just, maybe they wanted to make FCA look better. I don't know. Maybe they did it. I don't know. But at the end of the day, that kind of stuff that that I saw anyway tells me that, because I have a little bit on the inside knowledge of what goes on over at Chrysler, and quite frankly, they're interested in making sure that the brand is like bulletproof. They want to win a lot of awards, and they won a bunch of them so far. The crash thing, I think they got a 5-star rating on the I want to say the minivan. It's either that or the Pacifica, and then they got the other two, the Jeep and the Ram. I was blown away. I was really blown away. I mean, because I know what effort they put in, and I know what everybody else should be doing, especially with Tesla coming into the marketplace. And by the way, I think that the reason that Tesla sells so well isn't because of the car. It's because of the man.
Yeah, I
believe
sure,
that
a lot of,
they get
yeah,
70%
it's,
of
it's vision
the man.
Of, I mean, look, the cars are cool, but it's, you know, honestly, I think Teslas would not be Tesla cars without Elon, and if they weren't electric, not everyone who's buying them is buying them solely because they want an electric car. If it was simply that sort of left-brain decision, then they would go buy a Bolt or a Leaf or some of the other vehicles on the market.
I've driven these cars. I've driven a Leaf. I've driven a Bolt. I've driven a blah, blah, all these things. None of them made me go, ooh. But the day that we took that thing out,
Tesla 3.
I had been throwing rocks at, and then we go into the backyard over at, or the parking lot at Walsh College, right, because there's nobody there, and we start driving it around. I'm watching John driving it. Oh, yeah, this is pretty good. I like this. So shook hands with John by, and I got in the car and took it out there, and I, a long time ago, I used to race cars. I know what a car is supposed to be able to do, and I thought, how come he was having so much fun, and why haven't I driven this car yet? Because at the time, I looked at the gaps and said, poo. But you know what? When I got in it and I started trying to go, like, spinning around those lampposts and whatnot, that thing handled like a dream. And that wasn't the best of days. It was raining or snowing or sleeting or something. And it handled brilliantly well. Now, I got two guys in the company that have bought my company. That have bought the Tesla, even after we tore it all apart, they bought them. And one of them tried it out with the, whatever it's called, the ridiculous mode.
Ludicrous
mode. He said, that ain't going to work. Then he went to the level, and that ain't going to work either. And he's driving around in the calm mode. And this is a guy that jumps out of airplanes all the time. This is a guy that lives at... We went to a place for dinner, and they had trapeze things. He went and... He'd never been on a trapeze before, but he wanted to try it out. He broke his finger or thumb or something, you know, spinning around on this stuff, but he still toughed it through. At the end of the day, this is a guy that he got into the car and said, I think this is wonderful. I got to have it. And he bought it. He bought one. So
we had Henry Payne on the show who, when he first got his car, he took it to the M1 Concours and drove the hell out of it. So
Yeah.
Look, we've said a lot of nice things about Musk, so people are going to accuse me and Sandy of being, you know, converted to the fanboys. But there's still big questions here, right? Because you've said this car can be profitable if it was made at Toyota and GM plant level of efficiency, and that plant's got, like, twice the number of people that GM and Toyota ever did. So there are questions whether or not they can get the efficiency.
But it's also very vertically integrated.
Right. Yeah, yeah, right. I get
that's
it.
Where we have
but no one's been in this, so we don't know.
Yeah, we don't know.
No.
The other thing,
you know,
they've had one...
The videos they send out don't show you anything, really.
They've had one quarter of being cash flow positive and profitable with the Model 3 running. Is that sustainable? Because, you know, Bob Lutz used to tell me that even at Chrysler, they could hide a few hundred million in the couch cushions and move it from one quarter to the next. So he's got to show sustained profitability. And the other thing is, look, when the German car companies, and GM too, when they come out with a bunch of EVs in the next couple of years, if Tesla's growth sort of levels off, investors will most likely see that in terms of profitability, it's a car company. And then, and the current valuation is not justified by car company margins. And, you know, is that where things get tough? And look, he still has to make money. And he's making a car with a lot of expensive, cool technology in it that costs a lot of money. So, you know, and look, to sustain growth, he's got to start selling a $35,000 Model 3, which he said, if he was already selling it, would have, what, ruined or bankrupted the company? It was a superlative. It wasn't good. So, you know, can he make money as he gets down the funnel into people who can afford less than a $50,000 model?
Okay, and this is going to be the last. We're going to have to wrap up the show. But go ahead, Sandy.
There's another funnel coming, right? He's got another car on the drawing board. He's not going to make the same mistake.
I get it, but is he going to be able to? Where's he going to get the money to tool up for that?
I think
he's got a lot of debt. He has $3 billion on the books. He's got almost $1 billion due in March. So he's going to have to raise more money.
Nothing. That's three. That's basically two programs. $3 billion is two programs. That's the way I
look. I get it. I'm just like, these are the questions the market is asking about the company.
Well, actually, at the end,
will they be self-sustaining?
There's a lot of guys with $1 billion all by themselves that could say, "Here, go and do it." And if the guys at the UAE want to fund them, I don't remember who it was that was supposed to be funding some Arab.
Saudis?
Oh, well, don't take money from them, right? Man, you can't pay it back. They chop you up and put you in a meat grinder. But think about it. I mean, there's lots of people with lots of money. And when he takes his car to China, he's going to make a gazillion bucks. I guarantee it. Because if you think the fervor about the Tesla is big over here, you want to... I had 500 people standing in an audience, right? 500 people. All I was doing was talking about a few high points at Tesla. I mean,
you're talking 500 people in China.
In China. Get 500 people in the United States? That ain't gonna happen. You got to have somebody like Madonna or somebody. I don't know. Anyway, so that's the only people that can get stuff like that happening. But over there, there are 500 people who were standing around. And they locked the doors because they said we can only put 500 people in here. Outside, there was a whole lot more. They're eager to find out anything they can about Tesla. Tesla's a big deal. When he starts building them and shoveling them out the door, if he can bring the money back to the States, if there isn't another trade war or something, I'm guaranteeing you there's going to be plenty of money. And if he can't bring the money back, he'll develop it in China. And when he develops it in China, then it's going to put a big squeeze on the U.S. because he'll be able to take the design and move it back into the States. He'll have it designed much cheaper because they've got some real crackerjack engineers. I mean, in the olden days, it was all a big joke. But now you've got some engineers in China that have gone through a few programs with old guys from Europe that have been retired, old guys from Japan that have been retired, that have been training these characters for about 10 years, basically. These guys are crackerjacks. They can crank out a car. And I've seen plenty of examples of, I mean, gaps that are perfect, cars that go like little rocket ships. It's going to be a new day, I think. I don't think the Germans are going to catch up.
We could go on for another hour easy, but we got to...
We would if it was the old days of after hours with beer.
Yeah. And we had beer, too.
And beer, too. Exactly right. But we're going to wrap it up for now. Obviously, we're going to have you back at another point. But, Sandy, thanks so much for coming on.
Hey, no problem.
It was
no problem
a lot of fun.
Thank you.
Always
Thank
is.
Thank you very much. Yeah.
David Welch, always good to have you here, too.
Great being here. Thanks a lot.
You. And, Gary, you and I will just keep on doing the show. Yeah, we got to do that. So I want to thank all of you for having tuned in.
Auto Line After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone Tires, your journey, our passion, and by Lear, a global leader in automotive seating and electrical systems.
Visit our website, autoline.tv, where you can watch us live Thursday afternoons. Get your daily fix with Autoline Daily and in-depth analysis and interviews with Autoline This Week. There's all that and much more at autoline.tv.